What's up, Knoll Nation? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. I hope all you guys are doing good, enjoying the bye week from a stress-free Saturday that we had of college football where you kind of got to watch everybody else sweat it out while you got to sit back and relax. Now, of course, we miss watching the Seminoles play, and we're back to that this week in Doak Campbell Stadium. Finally, it feels like forever since we've had a home game, but it's the first one in like a month. It's sold out, so I'm excited. I'm going to be in Tallahassee. I cannot wait. I did a separate episode for the Florida State Virginia Tech preview, so make sure you check that out. It should be uploaded not long after this episode, but I wanted to dedicate a whole episode. We're doing two this week because I had a tweet go viral earlier this week, and most of you probably saw it. If you didn't, it kind of went crazy. I've even heard it talked about on another podcast, or that's what somebody told me anyway. So I'll start by reading you the tweet, and then we'll get into that. And then I also have something else I want to talk about in this episode, and I just didn't feel like we had enough time to do that and the Virginia Tech preview without running you guys way too long. I want to talk about, does Florida State really need to spread the ball around like everybody says they do? Or can they have success kind of following the blueprint that they have so far? And I have some numbers. We touched on it last week during the bye week show, which I do want to say for those of you who listen to that show, I realized afterwards that I had some audio issues with, I don't normally use an internet-based recording software, especially whenever my wife, who works from home, we kind of had to share the internet that day, and I live kind of out in the sticks, so the internet's not that great, but it won't happen again, I promise. We'll make sure that doesn't happen, so thank you for bearing with me on that. But anyway, I want to talk about that is something that we touched on, but I have some numbers I think you guys are going to find interesting. So before we jump into this, real quick, let me tell you guys about our sponsor, Alumni Hall, and I'm sure most of you have seen the new Seminole Heritage Collection that just dropped this week. That is the blue gear that Florida State does to honor the Seminole Tribe of Florida. A portion of the proceeds goes to a good cause to support that as well. So not only do you get to support a good cause, but you also get to get a cool look. I love the look of some of this stuff. I got my eyes on a few things. And our friends at Alumni Hall have you covered. They have everything you need, from the socks, the hats, the shirts, the jerseys. They do have an option where you can buy online and pick up in the store for those of you who are going to be in Tallahassee this weekend. That's what I'm doing because it's not going to make it to me in time, and I want it for Saturday, so I'm going to stop and pick up some of that on the way down there. And if you're going to do that, you can get it at a great price by using our promo code SPEAR to get 10% off online or in store. Visit alumnihall.com, navigate to the Florida State section, and if you are in Tallahassee, 1817 Thomasville Road is their location. Go in, tell them I said hi, use code SPEAR, and get a good price on the gear you want. So let's talk about this. I think the first thing we should start with is, let me read you the tweet so you know what we're talking about here. So I put this out. This, of course, was after the Florida State-Clemson game had already happened. So the narrative for that game had already been written. That game was already considered a close call against an unranked team. But then we saw Georgia go into Auburn and win 27-20 in a game they struggled in. Now, the tweet that I screenshotted both of the scores and I combined them together in an image, and then I put that out with the caption that said, one of these games will be considered a gritty conference road win. The other was considered a close call against an unranked team. UGA should drop in the polls. Isn't that how this works? And I mean, this thing, like, it went crazy. There was over 400 retweets or something like that. And a lot of people agree with what I said, because there's some proof that there is bias in the rankings, and that's what we're going to talk about. But a lot of people came out, and of course, they just said that we were just poor sports or whatever. And before I say anything else, I do want to acknowledge, because people love to remind me about this, I 100% understand that the AP poll this early in the season means nothing. College football playoff rankings are the only thing that matters, and it's still early in the season. I get it, but this is a football podcast, so what else are we going to talk about? So bear with me. I understand that. I know people get all up in arms about that, but I just want to get that part out of the way. So anyway, let's talk about this, because I think the problem here is you are having two top five teams that had a similar win conference game on the road that is being treated differently by the national media and by the pollsters. And really, now that we can say it because it's after the fact, we did see that Georgia stayed at number one. Now, they lost a little bit of their grip in first place votes, but I just want to talk about for a second the bias in the rankings and why I think it's kind of silly that we even have preseason rankings because of this. So obviously we know, like I said, Georgia won 27-20 over Auburn, who is currently 3-2. Florida State won 31-24 in overtime versus Clemson, who's 3-2. And a lot of the argument was, well, one ended in regulation and one went into overtime. And my argument with that was also Clemson's a better team. Now, Auburn might get better under Hugh Freeze. Obviously, this is year one under a new staff. They already look better than they did in the past, but that's not a really great Auburn team. They were running two different quarterbacks. They could not throw the ball. And I know there's been some upsets in the past where they've taken the number one team to the ropes and stuff like that. But statistically, Jordan Hare has not been the place to as hard of a place to win as Death Valley has. I mean, or when you talk about Clemson, they have only lost three home games now, with the Florida State loss included, since 2015. And I believe two of those were by 1 point. So, and one of those was in overtime. It is almost impossible to win in Death Valley, which is what we have seen. Now, they have lost, you know, two of their last four home games there, so that may be changing, but I think it's pretty agreeable that that is a really hard place to win. You know, something I talked about on the bye week episode, I don't really think if you put Duke in that same environment that Florida State played in, a sold out Death Valley, a few weeks to kind of get things figured out. And when you talk about Duke, they, even though they lost against Notre Dame, I think they really kind of did. I wanted to see how they were tested against another quality opponent because they hadn't played anybody good since Clemson. Now, of course, we'll see how things go moving forward with Riley Leonard, who did sustain a pretty nasty ankle sprain, possibly. They said he's going to be back, but it might be a few weeks. You know, he's a huge part of that offense, so we'll see how that looks going forward. But they look good in that game. So the thing is, like, when you talk about this, it's weird to me why you treat one team differently than the other. And so when you talk about how hard it is for Clemson to, you know, to win in Death, or for teams to win in Death Valley, like I said, I don't think if you put Duke back in that same situation a few weeks later, I don't think they beat Clemson. I don't think a lot of the top 25 teams that are currently ranked go into Death Valley in a sold out crowd and beat that Clemson team that we saw on Saturday. And so that's kind of my point of the thing is, I think that I'm not saying that Auburn is necessarily an easy place to play, but when you look at the records, it's not as tough as Death Valley. Clemson is also a more talented team. When I looked it up, Auburn has a blue chip ratio that's just sub 50% after losing some transfers at around 47, I think it was. Clemson's still at 70%, so on paper, they are a more talented team as well. They have an identical record. So when you look at Georgia, and I think people, a lot of people misconstrued what I was, the message of the tweet. A lot of people thought I was coming after Georgia, and that's not really the case. To a degree, it was, but I wasn't arguing that they shouldn't be number one, because everybody's counter-argument was, well, they're back-to-back national championship champions, so they get the benefit of the doubt. Florida State has not been good, so they don't get the benefit of the doubt. And to me, that is an argument that I can understand, but I think is flawed to a degree. So I'm not arguing that UGA shouldn't be number one, because if you've won two national championships in a row, you're still, you know, you haven't lost, you're still undefeated. You are the man until you're not. Until someone knocks them off, they deserve to be number one. But here's my argument. What happened in 2021 and 2022 with Georgia has no bearing on 2023. Those players that are gone are not walking through that door to play for you next week. And we'll see how they do against a Kentucky team that's pretty hot right now. So we'll see how that goes. My case with this whole thing was, why are teams treated differently based on something that did not happen in 2023? Georgia did not win a national championship in 2023 yet. I mean, they could, but they have not yet. And Florida State has not been bad in 2023. So why do they get the benefit of the doubt, but we get punished for nothing that has happened this year? Now, there was the counter argument that maybe Florida State didn't drop, they just got jumped, which is a fair case. But my argument to that was, why is Georgia immune to getting jumped, but Florida State is not? Because when you look at the resume, and we're going to talk about this in a second, Florida State has a better resume. But I think the thing when you want to talk about being jumped, I step back to 2014 Florida State, which is a great example. You're coming off a national championship, undefeated season, Heisman quarterback, you know, a lot of returning weapons. And despite going undefeated up until the playoffs in 2014, we saw game control was invented just to push Florida State down because it's like, oh, you're winning, but you're not winning by enough. You're not controlling the game, which miraculously that stat, who knows where it went because they don't use it anymore. But I think when you talk about that 2014 FSU team, for them to remain undefeated and get pushed down, they were not immune to being jumped into rankings like apparently Georgia is. So to me, that shows you right there that there is a degree of biases in the rankings. And someone said that, okay, well, the SEC is better than the ACC. And okay, fine. So they've won more national championships and top to bottom, they've been pretty good. You know, I'm not here to argue that the ACC is better than the SEC, but it's a down year as a whole for the SEC, which is kind of fun to watch. I looked it up, and the ACC is currently 4-2 against the SEC, with the one of the two losses being Tennessee over Virginia. And Virginia is the worst team in the ACC, one of the worst teams in college football. So I just think that it's kind of a flawed argument when you talk about giving someone credit for something that didn't happen this year. Whereas Florida State got pushed down for winning and Georgia has struggled in the only two decent games that they played. You know, when you talk about resumes alone, so Georgia, their best win is against a 3-2 Auburn team, their second, which in a game that they struggled in. And, you know, Brock Bowers is an absolute animal as far as a college football player goes. He is a dominant player, one of the best, probably maybe even the best player in the country. He was just unstoppable in that game. But if it wasn't for Brock Bowers, they don't win that game. And so the second best win that they have is against a 2-3 South Carolina team that just got smoked by Tennessee, that got beat by North Carolina, an ACC team. And that, you know, we know Tennessee's not that great. They lost to Florida, who has now struggled 2 weeks in a row, once against Charlotte, once against Kentucky. They lost that game. So Tennessee's probably not as good as they were expected to be in the preseason. So you're talking about your two best wins were struggle wins, and they were not even really against great teams. So the other thing about Georgia is, you know, when you talk about they don't really have a great win, and they beat up on a lot of bad teams. So looking at some S&P Plus rankings, because it's hard to quantify the quality of an opponent this early in the season because teams haven't really played a lot of games or a lot of games against tough opponents yet, but S&P does a better job of doing opponent and pace of play adjusted. So that's what we're going to use. So when you talk about the victories that they have, and I know LSU lost last week, so that kind of, you know, kind of puts a little downer on your best win, but Florida State has played two teams in the S&P top 20. Obviously that's LSU and Clemson. Georgia has only played one team in the S&P top 40. Clemson is 15th in S&P Plus rankings. Auburn is 34th. So, again, a better team and a harder place to play just because it went to overtime. To me, I mean, overtime win still counts, and that was my argument. It's like, who cares if it went to overtime? You beat a better team in a tougher environment. It just took you a little bit of extra time. So, and that's the thing is, like, I don't see why that's such a great argument that it just because one went to regulation and one's not. It's the quality of opponent as well. So when you, but the thing is, when you talk about, and I will mention real quick, when you talk about resumes, Michigan is currently sitting at number 2. They have played zero teams in the S&P Plus top 50. Now they've won every game like they're supposed to. They've blown everybody out, but they haven't played anybody. You know, they played Nebraska last week and blew them out, but we know Nebraska's not good. They got beat by Colorado, who got exposed against Oregon. So to me, there's too many things in when you talk about preseason rankings and AP polls, and this is why the college football playoff system is so much better than AP poll, because they consider your 2023 body of work and not what happened last year. They wait until the games have been played so they have a better idea. That's why that's a much better system. But this shows why they're flawed. And so when you talk about the reason I say that I don't think you should get the benefit of the doubt for something that happened previously is, and I know, and to be honest, I know Florida State started the season ranked high, so it is what it is. But when you, but obviously they're being treated differently than Georgia. When you look at Georgia's returning production for this year, they only returned 43.2% of their yards. We know that they had to replace their quarterback. They only return, I mean, they returned 70% of their tackles, which is good, but not 100%, obviously. Their offensive line returned 62 starts, which was 85th in the country, and their big play defense, sacks, tackles for loss, interceptions, was at 59.9%. So it's not like you returned 100%. It's not like you returned 22 starters from last year. So why are you getting credit for that? And I know they are immensely talented. I think they have the most talented roster when you talk about blue chip ratios in college football. They've recruited at an absolute high level. It obviously is not benefiting them this year because they're still struggling against not great opponents. And I think when you look at who has the most legitimate argument to be number one and number two, it has to be Florida State and Texas. I know Florida State is being punished for having two close games in a row. And the Boston College game obviously is the one that stands out. And I do think that if Florida State had not, I think they've been punished 2 weeks in a row for that Boston College game, because had you come out and you would have beat Boston College by, say, 30 points, I don't think people look at that Clemson game the same way. I think it's more like, oh, it was a hard-fought win against a Clemson team that's not ranked but still good in a tough environment. I think what happened was everybody was on suspect watch for Florida State, and this is also why I'm glad Mike Norvell came out and talked about the flu issue a little bit, so everybody can kind of realize like they were dealing with more than just, you know, Boston College and the red bandana atmosphere and all that type of stuff, you know, where you had a coaching staff who had nothing to lose and did some uncharacteristic things going forward or whatever. But I think when they saw that, everybody was kind of had a pre-written narrative in the back of their mind about who FSU was, not knowing that. Like, we knew that, but the national media didn't know that. And then you had another close game against Clemson, and everybody's now like, all right, well, they're cutting every game close. But at Clemson, that's a hard place to win anyway, so I expected that game to be close to begin with. So I do think Florida State is obviously being punished for having close games, and that's why I think it's important for you to come out and win against Virginia Tech in convincing fashion, just to kind of be like, all right, enough with the close game narratives. But like I said, when you talk about Florida State's resume alone, you have a win against two teams in the S&P top 20. You blew out Southern Miss like you were supposed to, who's absolutely terrible this year. They're 1-4. And then, so that win doesn't look as good. I think the problem that you're running into right now with FSU is LSU took a loss, and now Clemson is still unranked. But I also want to make a point about that in a second. So I still think you have better wins right now. And now we'll see what happens with LSU and Alabama when they play, you know, as far as the argument with Texas. But I still think if Florida State wins all their games and they're an undefeated ACC champion, I don't think you're going to get left out of the playoffs. But the reason that I think this is important is when you look at the fact that you have Texas and Oklahoma who both look good. Now, they play this weekend, so we'll see how that goes as far as competing for the championship in the Big 12 to make it to the playoffs. But the Pac-12 has some teams, you know, they've been left out of the playoffs a couple times. So now they have some teams that can compete. When you look at Oregon and Washington and potentially USC, if they can ever play defense. When you look at the Big 10, you have Michigan and Ohio State there who are both right now in position to be in the hunt for the playoffs. So I think that, and then of course you got Georgia out of the SEC, and who knows, Alabama, if they win out, they could end up being in the conversation too. Same really, you know, I just think it's, there could be a logjam at the playoff selection. This would be a great year for a 12-team playoff, but I think there could be a little bit of a logjam. So while I don't think Florida State as an undefeated ACC championship or champion would get left out, I think you do need a good, strong resume. You do need to beat some of these teams like you should. And I think the flu had a lot to do with that. You could tell from just the energy level and everything like that. So I do think they're going to bounce back, but I think you are seeing the bias in the polls, and I have another great example of that for you guys. Now, this one hurts a little bit to talk about because it does kind of discredit one of your wins, but it also shows that one of your wins was better than you're getting credit for. So, and that's LSU and Clemson. When you look at these two teams, so they have such a similar resume, but they've been treated differently, obviously, because we know the bias leans towards who you are and what conference you play in. So when you talk about LSU, right now they have two losses. Both of the losses came to ranked teams. The same with Clemson. They have two losses. Both came to ranked teams. Both of them lost to the same team. So LSU has lost to the number 5 team and the number 20 team. We know they lost to Florida State by 3 touchdowns. Of course, that was a neutral site game, so I will say that. But Clemson has 2 losses to number 5, which was an overtime loss at home. But they also lost to number 19, Duke, who fell a couple spots after losing to Notre Dame. When you look at their LSU's loss, I know Clemson's loss to Duke looks a little bit worse than LSU's loss to Ole Miss. They were on the road, and it was a really tight barn burner type of game. But Clemson, we know that when you saw what Duke did against Notre Dame, it shows that they are a legit team. Honestly, at full health with Riley Leonard, who knows? Maybe they beat Ole Miss. But I do think that a lot of that had to do with what Clemson did. So when you look at their losses, it's very similar. They lost a road game against a ranked team. Now, neither team has a ranked win. LSU has beat 2 Power 5 teams this season. Clemson has beat 1 in Syracuse. LSU is currently ranked 23rd. Clemson is all the way down at 9th in other teams receiving votes behind Tulane and behind Air Force. So they are outside of the top 30. Meanwhile, LSU is still ranked despite getting blown out by Florida State and losing to Ole Miss. So I just really, that's a great example of how two teams with a very similar record are being treated entirely different. Now, when you talk about LSU, they had a close game against Arkansas. So it's not like they were dominating the opponents that they played. They did blow out Mississippi State, but Mississippi State is, you know, they're in a bit of a rebuild after having the coaching issue, you know, with Mike Leach passing away and everything. But I just think that the evidence is clear that these two teams are being treated different. The evidence going back to 2014 shows that Florida State and Georgia as a number one team are being treated different. So I don't think there's any way that you can argue against there being biases in the polls. Like I said, I understand the argument if you want to say that they're the 2-time defending national champion and they get credit for that. And that's fine. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be a top 5 team or in the top 4. And I'm not even arguing that they shouldn't be number 1. What I'm saying is if you on a blind resume standpoint, Georgia is not the number 1 team in the country. They might end up there at the end of the season, but just based on resume alone from 2023 and absolutely nothing else, that's not the case. And it's just my argument was more these teams are not being treated the same. And that was the argument with the whole tweet. So I don't know you guys' feelings about that. I'm sure you probably feel similar to the same way, but that was something that, when I sent that tweet out, like I said, it absolutely blew up. So I felt like I wanted to talk about that some too, but I really do think that Florida State, as long as they win all their games, they'll be fine. But they need to start winning some games against lesser opponents in a convincing fashion because you are not going to get the same SEC bump that those teams get. You're not going to get the Big Ten bump, which I think is even more than what you're seeing in the ACC. So those are 2 examples, really 3 examples when you talk about 23 FSU and Georgia that I think are really interesting to look at. So with that being said, the next thing I want to talk about is Florida State's passing game, because this has been really a big talk the last week or so about Florida State does not spread the ball around enough, and they need to start spreading it around. And what I want to do, we touched on this in the bye week episode, I wanted to go back and look at some numbers to see, like, can they have success? Has a team followed that blueprint and had success? So that's what we're going to talk about in this next segment. So I'm with everybody else. Like, I would like to see Florida State spread the ball around more. I know there's a lot of conversation in taking the underneath routes and things like that, the crossing routes, getting more guys involved. I'm with that because that keeps the chains moving. It helps the offense's success rate, and I think that's all a good thing. I think it's good to get more targets involved because you're also building the depth of talent that you have. You know, knock on wood, in case you had to miss a guy had to miss some time or something like that. But I think a lot of people, from what I have with the numbers, I think a lot of people are a little too worried about it because I think they can still have success this way. And that's the case we're going to make, because when you have talented targets like Florida State. I mean, you didn't bring Keon Coleman in to throw the ball to somebody else. Now, that doesn't mean you can't spread it around, but I think when you have talented guys, you have to feed them the ball. You need the ball in their hands, and you've seen some other teams do that in the past. So that's what we're going to talk about real quick. Now, I do apologize. We're going to nerd out for a minute with some numbers and some stats here, but we'll make it. We'll try and keep it as light as we can. So just bear with me there, but I think you guys are going to find this interesting. So looking at 2023 Florida State, so far their target distribution. So they've had 122 targets, pass targets on the year. The top two receivers have accounted for 50% of those targets. The top three receivers have accounted for 63.1%. The top four have accounted for 72.1%. So keep those three numbers in mind. 50, 63, 72. Now, I will first say that when you talk about the target percentage, you also have to keep in mind that so far, Florida State has played two big games against tough defenses. And in that, you want your best playmakers to have the ball. At the same time, you may have to feed them the ball because they're the only ones that can win one-on-one matchups against that type of defender. So that is something too. And when you look at the numbers, also keep in mind before we get into that part, so not only was two to three games big games, one was a close game, so you had to keep your foot on the gas for more than you expected to in the game. And Portier has not been available. I didn't even really honestly know he was injured. I just thought maybe they hadn't got him on the field yet. But I checked a website that posts, you know, players who are listed on out with injury. Now, of course, we know Florida State doesn't share injury news, so I don't even know what the context of it was. But he was listed as Florida State as being injured. You have also have, when you talk about your slot receiver, look, I'm as excited as anybody else to get Destin Hill involved. I want to see what he can do. He's still a inexperienced true freshman. Now, he's not by definition a true freshman when you talk about he's a few years older, physically matured, but in a sense, he is technically a true freshman. You also have Winston Wright in the slot who's coming off a devastating injury. So I think that the other thing, if Portier's been hurt, now Darian Williamson we know is a talented receiver. You've seen Deuce Spann get involved some too. You know, you also have Kyle Morlock, who hasn't been targeted quite like Jaheim Bell. But you just have to look at, in a big game situation, right now they have not had time to really develop the further down the depth chart guys. Ja'Kai Douglas has been out as well. So hopefully that's something we see going forward. But looking at game one against LSU, those top three targets, Jaheim Bell, Johnny Wilson, and Keon Coleman, they accounted for 24 of 31 targets, 77.4%. In game four against Clemson, it was 26 of 37, 70.3%. So they were targeted very heavily in those two games. Against Southern Miss, they were only targeted 12 of 31 times for 38.7%. And Boston College was higher, but not quite as much, 15 of 23, 65.2%. So as you see the schedule progress, as they are not playing teams that have a really good defense or they're able to run away with some games, you're going to see these numbers kind of level out a little bit. But getting back to what we were talking about, when you talk about the target distribution, remember 50, 63, 72. So let's stretch back to the best FSU team we've seen in the last 20 years or so. That's 2013 FSU. So when you look at their top two, they accounted for 47.4%, just slightly less than 2023 FSU. Of course, we know they blew a lot of teams out, so you don't have the same body of work to compare to. Like we said, when Florida State plays more games, it'll probably even out. And we know 2013 FSU blew out almost everybody. So top two was at 47.4. Top three was at 65.7, which is higher than 2023 Florida State. Top four is at 75.8%. which is higher than 2023 FSU. So that team went on to win a national championship with a concentrated number of targets to really just the top four guys, even higher than what we're seeing in 2023. Now, you have some other teams, and what I basically did was I went back through some recent national champions because you want to see, like, that's what Florida State is trying to go for this year, is win the ACC, make the playoffs, and make a run at a title. So I wanted to compare teams that have had the highest level of success. You know, I don't really care how much you spread the ball out if you finished 100, ranked 120th. We want to see who has been able to be on top of the mountain with that same kind of blueprint that Florida State has. Now, you can win more than one way, obviously. Not everybody does that. When you look at 2018 Clemson, they spread the ball out a lot more, 34.9, 49.8, 63.6. But when you look at 2019 LSU, this is another great example because this is one of the best passing offenses that we've seen in college football history. So their top two targets accounted for 46.2%, top three was at 58.3%, and top four at 69.9%. So really not that far off from what 2023 FSU is at. And like we said, those numbers will come down some throughout the season. Now, 2020 Bama, they spread the ball out a little bit more. Now, something I do find interesting is when you look at 2021, 2022 UGA, they spread the ball out a lot more. And this is going to make more sense in just a second. But so they were at 33.4 in 2021, 44 and 52, and then 35.3, 45.8, and 55.1 in 2022. So you can see that they actually got a little more concentrated in 2022. Now, where that comes into play is when you look at the percentage of yardage, which is the next stat I want to show you here. So 2023 FSU is currently, now this was before the bye week, so I don't know currently where they're at now, but before the bye week, Florida State had the 32nd ranked passing offense. As far as yardage goes, their top two targets are responsible for 50%, top three are responsible for 63.5, and top four responsible for 71.5. So now also do keep in mind, those top three have had a lot more snaps played than the rest of the team, so they're naturally going to have more targets anyway. So again, 50, 63.5, and 71.5. When you look at Florida State in 2013, the yardage distribution, their top two was at 48.4%, which is just slightly less than 2023 FSU. Their top three was at 69.5, which is even more than Florida State this year. And their top four was at 82.1, over 10% higher than 2023 FSU. So their top four guys accounted, they had over 2,000 yard receivers, two individual 1,000 yard receivers that year. So that's the thing, is like they had success. They won a national championship with only four receivers accounting for over 80% of the yards. And Florida State is currently with top four guys. And the reason I included the fourth is because you're not going to throw a lot to any of those, like Jaheim Bell maybe, but you're not going to throw to those guys out of the backfield. So I did include a back because, you know, everybody runs screens and stuff like that. So I included the fourth guy. That's why I did four, even though we know that the three top receivers have been concentrated with most of the targets. So anyway, so 2023 FSU did it being even more concentrated in their yardage when you talk about the top four guys. Now, when you talk about 2019 LSU, the second ranked passing offense that year. And guys, when I did this research, this was really bonkers. They had over 6,000 passing yards. That is just unreal. But when you look at it, obviously we know they had, you know, Jamar Chase, and they had a really talented receiving core. So their top two in 2019 accounted for 55.1%, 5% more than Florida State is currently at. Top three was at 66.3, around 3% more, and top four was at 75.7, which is about 4% or so higher than, or 75.7, about 4% higher than Florida State this year. So they had really similar numbers and had one of the best passing offenses in college football and won a national championship in one of the most dominant seasons besides 2013. Like really, when you think about it, you talk about two of the most dominant teams in college football history. One of the first, you know, probably top five that come to mind is 2013 FSU and 2019 LSU. So those two dominant offenses followed the same blueprint where they got the ball to their best playmakers, and that was really the majority of what they did. So now, when you talk about Alabama in 2020, they had the third best passing offense, and they followed a similar pattern, 59.5 by their top two, which is higher than FSU currently, 78.7 by their top three, which is significantly higher than Florida State, and then their top four accounted for 81.4%, which is very close to 2013 FSU and much higher than 2023 FSU. So you can win like this. That's the whole point of this. I know this is a lot of numbers coming at you, but this is the point of all this, is that you can win following that blueprint. And what I was talking about with Georgia earlier that I think is very interesting, when you talk about how they got even more concentrated on their targets in 2022 than 2021, And we know that Georgia had an elite defense in 2021, so you can get away with not having a great offense when you play that level of defense. And we know Florida State's defense is good but not great, so you need the offense to really live up to the hype. Now, when you look at 2021, Georgia's accounting for yards was a little bit lower, 36.5 in the top two, 48.3 at the top three, 59.6 at the top four, whereas 2022 was 38.4, 49.8, and 60%. So not a huge difference, but they had gotten more concentrated in their targets and yards. And in 2021, they had the 51st ranked passing offense, and in 2022, they had the 15th. So they actually got better by concentrating their targets to their top playmakers more often. And I do think another thing that when you talk about Georgia versus, say, 2013 FSU or 2019 LSU, you know, they have Brock Bowers and they had Darnell Washington, all that. Those guys were good. You don't really have another receiver that name pops out in like college football history as being a dominant guy. That's just not something they had. So I think a lot of it depends on your personnel as well. Like if you have just a bunch of really good college football players and then maybe say someone like Brock Bowers, who's a dominant guy, it doesn't, you know, it's okay to spread it around more. But when you have dominant guys like LSU had in 2019 or like Florida State had in 2013, you want to get them the ball as much as possible. So the whole point in what I'm saying in this, like I said, I know it's a lot of numbers. I apologize for that, but I thought you guys would find this really interesting. And you know how we, you know, we like some stats on the show too at times. But what this says is there's more than one way to win a football game. But by Florida State being concentrated in their targets to their best receivers, you can still find success at the highest level. You can still win a national championship by being even more concentrated than what they are right now. But like I said, I think as you progress through the schedule, as you go through the season and you play some teams like, say, Wake Forest, who doesn't look that good, Pitt, who looks absolutely terrible this year, North Alabama, where who knows if they even play in that game, you will see those numbers start to trickle down. You will see them spread it out a little bit more. I'm pretty confident in that. I'm sure that's something they're going to work on as well. But you also have to figure in when Florida State's struggling to run the ball and you have to throw it, you know, who can you trust to go get the ball? And so far, it's been those three guys. Now, like we talked about before, I think once you see Portier healthy and back in the lineup, because he didn't have that big spring to do nothing this year, that's not the case. He's going to get worked in, and I know they want to do that. But once you get him back, once you get Ja'Kai Douglas back, once you get an opportunity in a game like maybe even Virginia Tech to get Destin Hill involved where the game is not tight and on the line, which that's another thing that, you know, like we talked about, Florida State's strength of their schedule was concentrated to the early part of the schedule. So I think you're going to see those numbers level out a little bit, but I think this is how this offense is going to work this year for the most part. But you can see through the numbers that they can still be successful at the highest level, and the proof is there. And what's even better about it is the proof was there from a prior Florida State team that we know was dominant, from a 2019 LSU team that was dominant, and from a 2020 Bama team that also won a national championship. So that's what the numbers tell us. And sometimes, like I said, that's why I know stats can get boring to listen to them reeled off, but they do tell a very interesting story. So while I would love to see Florida State spread the ball around just to get other players involved, to develop that depth, to keep the chains moving and take the underneath stuff and whatnot, you do see where what they're doing has worked. And obviously we know this offense needs, they just need to be more in rhythm as far as that goes. And they need to get the run game going, which I think they're going to do against Virginia Tech. So, you know, and you'll hear us talk about that in the preview, but I think they can find success with doing this as well. If they, even if to say nothing does change and they don't spread the ball around more, they can still have success. As long as you have your top playmakers available every week, I think this is something that is not going to hurt them by not spreading it around as much. I know we all want to see it. I hope they do work on that a little bit. But even if they don't, it's not detrimental to the success that they can have because, you, like I said, you didn't bring in Keon Coleman to throw it to somebody else. You brought it in to feed him the ball, and he has been a dominant receiver so far. So to me, the numbers paint an interesting picture, and I thought you guys would find that interesting. So with that being said, guys, we are going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Like I said, I got two episodes coming for you this week. This one just ran. I knew this one was going to run a little bit long, so I wanted to break off the Virginia Tech preview into a separate episode. So that will be out shortly. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this, because I felt like it was two kind of hot topics that I really wanted to address and that I thought everybody would enjoy. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Make sure you guys join us on social media so you can get in on these types of conversations and kind of get in and see how these things play out. Like I said, while you're over there, also check out the hype video that I just put out for the Florida State Virginia Tech game. I think you guys are going to like it. It turned out pretty well. And then, of course, like I said, I really appreciate you guys supporting the show through supporting our sponsor, Alumni Hall. Go check out the FSU gear they got. I'm loving this new Seminole Heritage collection, and I can't wait to get my hands on some of it this weekend when I'm in Tallahassee. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off. So that's going to be it for us today, guys. Check out the Virginia Tech preview episode coming out real soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, and go Noles.